Do you want a chocolate? I could eat about 1.5 million of these. My mom always said life was like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're gonna get. Those must be comfortable shoes. I bet you could walk all day in shoes like that and not feel a thing. I wish I had shoes like that.
My feet hurt.
Mom always said there's an awful lot you can tell about a person by their shoes. Where they going? Where they been? I've worn lots of shoes. I bet if I think about it real hard, I could remember my first pair of shoes. Mama said they'd take me anywhere.
The 1994 blockbuster Forrest Gump was a parable on our time. Now, many of you guys watched it as the history of our time, but it really was a parable on how confidence and intelligence can oftentimes ruin the world, and humility, and sometimes just a plain old dose of listening and doing what mama says can make life successful. It's interesting in the story of Forrest Gump that here's a guy with a 76 IQ that all he does is listen to the proverbs of his mama. Stupid is as stupid does. So I guess I don't want to do anything stupid. And he goes far in this parable, whereas all of the intelligent people mess up their lives. We got presidents messing up the world. We've got Lieutenant Dan defining courage as staying put and dying rather than saving your buddies. We've got Jenny, who's in this incredible search for love and actually destroys her health while she pursues love. And all along the way, just the simple, humble, take the truth and apply it creates success. Listen to what the actors say when they're talking about the characters in the movie. Watch this.
Forrest really only believes in three things. He believes in God, and he believes in his mama, and he believes in Jenny. And anything other than that has to be filtered through those three things.
Did you hear what I said, Forrest? You're the same as everybody else. You are no different.
Mama Gump is the support that Forrest feels all of his life. The voice who gave him strength and wisdom and unconditional, full-out love.
Mama knew what Forrest was like right from the very beginning, and she was not one to, you know, to hide him.
My boy Forrest is going to get the same opportunities as everyone else.
Her word was bond, and her wisdom was golden. And so the fact that he could always turn to his mama for the straight dope played a big role in his growing up.
Forrest, I'm so proud of you. I happen to believe you make your own destiny. You have to do the best with what God gave you.
What's my destiny, Mom?
You're gonna have to figure that out for yourself.
So who do you turn to for the straight dope? Here's the image I want to leave in your mind, okay? Get this image in your mind. In the same way that Forrest's mom took his face in her hands so that he would not be distracted by anything else, and she spoke truth into his face and then kissed him on the cheek and put him on the bus. Now go just do what I say. The God of eternity is trying to take your face in his hands, to look you in the eye, to keep you from being distracted by everything else, and he wants to speak his truth into you, kiss you on the cheek, and send you out into this world to experience the destiny that he's designed for you. And that's what we find in the book of Proverbs. Now, as we started studying this book, we didn't just jump into the characters in the book. We'll get to those a little later in the summer. What we jumped into as we jumped into the book is the theology of the book. And the first thing that we discovered, our first big truth or big idea or big theme, is that the fear of the Lord is the beginning. The fear of the Lord is the beginning. If you remember, in chapter 9, verse 10, it says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding." In other words, don't trivialize or downplay God in your life. Actually, play God up as the most important and the most significant, someone that you don't want to trivialize or mess with. We fear God. He's incredible. He's awesome. The second big thought that we talked about last week from this incredible book is that wisdom, or God wired the world with wisdom. God wired the world with wisdom. In chapter 8, it says, I was the craftsman by his side while the world was being created. And in the same way that the laws of the physical universe operate, so do all the other laws of human relationships, human government, human economics. All those things are hardwired into the world. And so God's done this, so we'll get it. Now, today, we're going to ask and answer the question. It's pretty simple. If God's hardwired the world with wisdom, and I need wisdom, how do I get it? How do I get it? Here's what the proverb says. Really simple. Listen and learn to live wisely. The attitude of self-confidence and arrogance will block yourself from being a listener. Having a mouth that's constantly giving advice to yourself and others and not taking in with your ears what God is saying, listening, and then learning how to do it and applying it. And whether you're 92 or whether you're 2.5, being a lifelong learner gives you wisdom. And the passage we're going to look at this morning is found in Proverbs chapter 3. So if you'll grab your Bibles, look at Proverbs chapter 3. We're going to look at, very quickly this morning, this very significant passage on the whole issue of pursuing wisdom. And the first thing that we're going to discover in the first 8 verses of this chapter is that wisdom is a stable pursuit. It's a stable pursuit. Wisdom will land your feet on stability in this life. Look at what he says, starting in verse 1 of Proverbs chapter 3. He says, "My son, do not forget my teaching, but keep my commandments in your heart, for they will prolong your life many years and bring you prosperity." Then he says, "Let love and faithfulness, two incredible virtues, concern for people and keeping your commitments." Concern for people's love, faithfulness, keeping your commitments, following through. Let love and faithfulness never leave you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Then you will win favor and a good name in the sight of God and man. You're going to have a great relationship with God if you do those two things. You're going to have a great relationship with other people. You're going to be known and respected. And then he says this, verse 5, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and shun evil. This will bring health to your body and nourishment to your bones. Now, what I want us to do is take a few minutes this morning and really look at verses 5 and 6, because these are key verses in understanding wisdom and how wisdom works. He says in verse 5, trust in the Lord with all your heart. The word trust there means that you are going to put total confidence in. And it implies that with that total confidence, you're going to act on that. So he says, whatever God is all about, whatever he says, whatever he directs, you're going to put total confidence in him, and then you're going to live your life in accordance to that. And the reason why I say total is because the passage continues to define it. He says, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Now, when we come back to this in the future message, we're going to talk about what does it mean to do the heart thing? Like, what is the heart? And how does that work? But trust the Lord with all your heart, not part of your heart, but all of your heart. And then he says, in all your ways, acknowledge him. So everything within me, all my heart, everything that I do, all my ways. So what I believe and how I live is completely focused on God and what God has to say. Now he contrasts that with, and lean not on your own understanding. Now, the word lean there is not the way we tend to think about leaning. We tend to think about leaning as leisure. You know, you get in your big lazy boy and you just kind of lean back and you just kind of relaxing. That's not what this word is talking about. The word here is referring to the concept of leaning for stability. Leaning for stability. In other words, I'm leaning as if my life depends on it. So, for example, if I were to, you know, break my leg or sprain my ankle or something like that, and I needed support. Like, I would go down and get one of these orthopedically correct, stable, rated at 260 pounds. Oh, that ought to cover me by about 10 or so. And what I'm doing now with my leg and my weight is I'm leaning on this. Now, if this went away, what would happen? Or if this crumbled under my weight, what would happen? Like, I would fall down. That's this concept. He says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. Now, here's the contrast. Don't miss this because it's real important in the passage. What he's saying is that the action of trust and lean are actually the same thing. It's putting your confidence and acting upon something, those concepts, they actually have the same action. But one of them is a very powerful, noble idea. It's the word to trust. One of them is just a kind of utilitarian word. It's the word for lean. And what the writer's trying to do, is Solomon pens this out, is he's trying to show us that one has stability and one has instability, and the stability between the two is based on the object of where you're leaning or putting your trust. So what if I did the same thing, only I was using a yardstick and decided, like, okay, you'd say not very stable, right? This is probably not going to support my weight. Human understanding. God. That's what he's saying. Whenever it comes to deciding how to live your life, you've got one of two directions that you can go. You can say, I am going to have the God of the universe be my guide, my direction, and I'm going to follow him, believing that he knows more about it than I do, that he actually created the world and the ways of the world. And so when it comes to how I'm supposed to treat my wife, God's got a good idea for this. In fact, he's got the really only stable idea. Now, I may have a whole bunch of other things that I think. It's called my own understanding. Now, which of these ways am I going to go? Now, look, he says it even a little bit more specific in the next verse. Look at verse 7. He says, verse often quoted at our house, "Do not be wise in your own eyes." Do not be wise in your own eyes. And what's he saying there? He's saying, don't be thinking that what you think, the way you're looking at it, the way you perceive it, is brilliant, intelligent, it's wise. I often wonder when I'm making decisions or when you're making decisions and we kind of face like God's plan and we decide, nah, I don't think I'm going to do that. I kind of got a better idea. What that must look like from God's perspective. Well, here's what I think it might look like from God's perspective. So God's looking down on Tim. And as God's looking down on Tim, here's what he sees. Hey, Tim, man. I guess I didn't realize you were so handsome, but you know, now that I'm looking at myself, it's kind of, you know, glaringly obvious to me. But you know, I am so impressed with you. Like your idea of how to manage your life, your ideas about how you manage your money, like you've got to be smarter than those idiots on Wall Street. I mean, think about how you've got this figured out. And, you know, when it comes to deciding your kids and what you're going to do with them, like you've got the whole world worked out. In fact, like Tim, you know, there are a couple brilliant people in the world. And if you died, there would be one less. And the God of the universe is looking down from heaven and going, you've got to be kidding me. Like, I am the one who created the world. I am the one who has the plan of history that's marching toward the glorious conclusion of the kingdom of my Son, Jesus Christ. I am the one who understands who you are and how you're wired and what your small little mind is capable of. I am the one who designed you and established you and gave you breath and I placed you in this world. And now you're telling me that you've got it figured out, that your idea is better than mine. Come on. That's being wise in your own eyes. Now, let me just ask you guys. How many of you tend to fall into that category? You tend to think, you know, I'm pretty savvy when it comes to the way I think about things. And if all the other idiots in the world would just get on my page, like it would be a better world. You know, every one of you guys that has ever had an argument or has ongoing arguments with your parents, your spouse, why do you have those? Because right here, you think you know. You think you know. There's a real danger to this idea that I know what's best for me. I know what's best for mine. I know what's best for my world. So he says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. And then he says, in all your ways, acknowledge him. Now the word acknowledge there is literally the Hebrew word to know. In other words, in all your ways, know him. If you know him, you're going to listen to him, you're going to follow him. In other words, if you really understand the magnitude and the brilliance of your God, if you really understand his love for you and his desire for you to experience the wise life, if you really understand the brilliance of his truth, you're going to do it his way. You're going to follow him. In fact, disobedience is frequently a lack of really understanding and knowing God. So if you find yourself off the path on a regular basis, that has a lot to do with your view of God and knowing God. And he says, in all your ways acknowledge him, and then the promise, he will make your path straight. Now, We don't live in a world of walkers, okay? So we walk for exercise, which is somewhat recreation, but these guys walked for transportation. Like everywhere they went, they walked. Now, if you were going to leave this parking lot here and you were going to head straight to your domicile, wherever you live, wouldn't it be great if there was a path that went straight there? Because if you have to walk on the roads, you're going to have to go a long way out of your way to get there. The best paths in the ancient world for someone who had to travel miles and miles and miles in a day were the paths that actually set out from where the person was and made the straightest line to the place where you were going to go. Here's what God is saying. God is saying, if you will follow my way, what I will do with your life is I will take you on the most direct path. You won't be detouring along the way off into silliness, dreams that don't work out, ideas where things are going to break and where people are going to get hurt and where relationships are going to get messed up. You're not going to be detouring on this long, winding road. You will be able to move directly down the direction that I've set for you. You're going to see your purpose lived out. In addition to that, in the ancient world, every time there was a bend in the road, where you couldn't see because of the hills and the topography and all that, that was the place where bandits lived. That's where they hung out. So the bend in the road, those were dangerous places. So when God says, I'm going to make your path straight, he says, I'm going to lead you down a path that moves you away from all the traps and get you safely where I want you to be. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. Remember last week, the challenge that I think we often face? You know, when it comes to our self-will, being wise in our own eyes, we think that we can kind of chart a new course and we're going to be okay. And usually when we go our own way, there is a sense of euphoria for a while. Just like I shared in that country song, that oftentimes falling really feels like flying for a little while. And so we say, okay, God, I'm getting out of this marriage. Okay, God, I'm not going to take my parents' direction. I'm going to do my own thing here. And for a while, it feels like we're flying. But we're going to crash. Break God's plan, and you're going to ultimately crash. So if you want a stable life, seek wisdom. Secondly, before I finish, I don't want to stop on this point for just a second, but I don't want to spend too much time here. Do you think you kind of, does that make sense, that verse? You get that? Is that clear? Everybody understand? You understand that? That's clear, right? Okay. Pretty straightforward. So it should be pretty simple. I think some of you would even say, you know, I want to do this. This is my heart's desire. I want to do this. And so Solomon then gives two examples. Ouch. Look at the first one. Verse 9. Honor the Lord with your wealth, with the first fruits of all your crops. Then your barns will be filled to overflowing and your vats will brim over with new wine. What did he just say? Let me think about that for just a second. Okay, what he just said was, honor the Lord with your wealth. That would be give to support the kingdom and do it with the first fruits of your crops. That would be your first priority. So I want to trust in the Lord with all my heart and lean out on my understanding. And the first thing he said is when it comes to how you manage your money, your finances, you need to set aside money from everything you make. And the first priority would be to put some of that into kingdom work. Now, I'm not saying that because I'm worried that Hill Country Bible Church needs your money and all that kind of stuff. Listen, I'm not saying that for any of those reasons. We're doing pretty good financially. Now, we could always use more because if we get more, that's more ministry. But I'm saying this because this is what God is saying to us. The areas that we oftentimes say, God, you know what? You don't know what's best for me. I know what's best for me. I know what my bills are. I know what my desires are. I know what my income is. And so therefore, I'll do this my way. Bingo. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Well, I'm just a college student. I don't make that much. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not lean on what? your own understanding. God starts off, like right after he challenges us with that, he gives us the first test. What are you doing with your money? That will tell you whether you trust me. Wow. Okay. Second one, equally as hard. This is painful. It's painful to preach it. Verse 11, he says, my son, do not despise the Lord's discipline and do not resent his rebuke, because the Lord disciplines those he loves as a father the son he delights in. The second thing he says is, whenever God calls us on the carpet for bad behavior, in other words, we get consequences in our lives for things that we've done that we shouldn't have done, and God brings consequences, hardship, pain into our lives. Do we accept that as love from God to kind of bring us back to reality, or do we get mad at God and say, God, what are you doing to me? How dare you? If you really love me, you would make it easy for me. Whoa. How I respond to discipline speaks to whether I really trust God. Do I really believe in him? Do I really, in all my ways, acknowledge him? So what I do with my money and how I deal with the hardships in my life are two big tests as to whether, personally, I'm leaning on my own understanding or I'm trusting in God. Let's get past that. Okay, wisdom is not only a stable pursuit, it's also a lifelong pursuit. It's a lifelong pursuit. It starts from the time we're born, and it goes all the way until the time we die, and it's something that we give ourselves to. Let me show you several passages we're going to look at real quickly. Starting in verse 13, he says, blessed is the man who finds wisdom, the man who gains understanding, for she is more profitable than silver and yields better returns than gold. She is more precious than rubies. Nothing you desire can compare with her. Long life is in her right hand, and her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are pleasant ways, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to those who embrace her. Those who lay a hold of her will be blessed. Look at chapter 4, starting in verse 3. Solomon writes, when I was a boy in my father's house, that would be David, still tender and the only child of my mother, he taught me and he said, lay hold of my words with all your heart, keep my commandments and you will live. Then he says this, he says, get wisdom, get understanding. Do not forget my words or swerve from them. Do not forsake wisdom and she will protect you. Love her and she will watch over you. Verse 7, wisdom is supreme. Therefore, get wisdom, though it cost all you have. Get understanding. Esteem her and she will exalt you. Embrace her and she will honor you. She will set a garland of grace on your head and present you with a crown of splendor. Turn back to chapter 2. In chapter 2, verse 1, it says, my son, if you accept my words and store up my commands within you, turning your heart to wisdom and apply your heart to understanding, if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding, if you look for it as for silver, like if you look for it as hard as you work in your job to make money, if you look for it as for silver and search for it as for hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. Now look at this next verse. Verse 6, for the Lord gives wisdom, and from his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. He holds victory in store for the upright. He is a shield to those whose walk is blameless, for he guards the course of the just, and he protects the way of the faithful one. And what these passages all have in common is they're telling us that wisdom is a pursuit that's worth more than financial wealth, that will provide for us more than simply having a good perspective on the world. They will actually give us life, those principles that we learn from wisdom, and that we will begin to connect with God at a way that is way beyond any level that we have up to this point. And so every single one of us ought to be a listener to the Word of God. We ought to be a learner constantly through the course of our life, learning what he has to say. And that requires a humility of heart and then aggressively putting it into practice. Wisdom is a lifelong pursuit. And those people who in their old age have been pursuing wisdom over the course of their life, they are the sages who truly understand the heart of God. They don't sit in their house in fear of all the things that are going on in the world around them. They don't get angry and grumpy and mean-spirited because they feel like life has somehow let them down. They are the ones who are sweet and gentle and peaceful and humble and dispensing wisdom and confident in God and deeper in their prayer life and not worried about the world. Those are the people who are precious few in number, because it starts at a young age and it goes through your whole life. It's a process of life. Dallas Willard, a philosophy teacher at UCLA and also a Christian writer, tells this really insightful story in his book, The Great Omission. He said, a short while ago, I led a faculty retreat for one of the better Christian colleges in the United States. In my opening presentation, I told the group that the important question to consider was what Jesus himself would say to them if he were the speaker at their retreat. I indicated my convictions that he would ask them this simple question. So, teachers or professors in a Christian college, he's asking them this question. He says, Jesus would ask them, why don't you respect me in your various fields of study and expertise? Why don't you recognize me as the master of research and knowledge in your fields? Let that sink in for a minute. Why don't you respect me as the master of research? Honor me as the master of knowledge in your fields. He said the response of these Christian professionals was interesting to observe, to say the least. Some thought the question would be entirely appropriate. Many were unsure of exactly what I was saying, and quite a number responded with, "Are you serious?" The idea that Jesus is master of fields such as algebra, economics, business administration, or French literature simply had not crossed their mind and had a hard time finding access when presented to them. He goes on to say, that brings out a profound, significant fact. In our culture and among Christians as well, Jesus Christ is automatically disassociated with brilliance or intellectual capacity. Not one in a thousand will spontaneously think of him in conjunction with words such as well-informed, brilliant, or smart. Far too often he is regarded as hardly conscious. He's taken as a mere icon, a wrath-like semblance of a man living on the margins of the real life where you and I must dwell. He is perhaps fit for the role of sacrificial lamb or alienated social critic, but little more. But can we seriously imagine that Jesus could be Lord if he were not smart? If he were divine, would he be dumb or uninformed? Once you stop and think about it, how could he be what Christians take him to be in other spheres and respects, and not be the best informed, most intelligent person of all, the smartest person who ever lived, bringing us the best information on the most important subjects? What lies at the heart of the astonishing disregard of Jesus found in the moment-to-moment existence of multitudes of professing Christians is the simple lack of respect for him. He is not seriously taken to be a person of great ability. But what then can devotion or worship mean if simple respect is not included? One more paragraph. By contrast, the early Christians who took the power of God's life in Jesus to all corners of the earth thought of Jesus as one, quote, in whom are the hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge, Colossians 3:2. They thought of him as the master of every domain. A natural progression of this confidence in him was toward, quote, doing everything in word or deed, all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father. That is, they learned to do everything they said or did in cooperative action with Jesus as their always present teacher. How about you? Does Jesus know everything about your life? Does he understand everything? So
Let's start with the basics. Do you believe that Jesus defines who you are as a person and why you're here? That has huge ramifications. Because the world in which we live is not a net neutral world. Every advertising agency in the world is trying to define you and get you to buy their belief in who you are. Because if they can define who you are, then they can tell you what you need. And when they tell you what you need, you will follow them to their product. Right? And so there are lots and lots and lots of people that are trying to define what femininity is, what it means to be a woman, what it means to be a 12-year-old girl. Do they know better than Jesus? Do they? There are many people out there trying to define what it means to be a 52-year-old man. And to shape your thinking in such a way that you will operate in this world according to their understanding. Hey, if by the time you're 52, you can't afford that two-seater sports car, then you're a failure, right? So figure out a way to get it, because that's who you are, men, right? Or does Jesus know who you are? So when you start answering the fundamental questions, you begin to find out that there's a whole lot of information out there that is actually working against your very life. And it will kill you. So you can choose to embrace and believe and understand that God Himself has designed this universe and that Jesus knows you, knows what's best for you, knows how your life should work. And you can follow that. And it's going to take you all of your life. It's a lifelong pursuit. But it's a worthy pursuit, though it cost everything you have. It cost everything you have. Find it, because there you're going to find life. Finally, wisdom is a guided pursuit. Wisdom is a guided pursuit. God hasn't put us in this world and just said, hey guys, figure it out. God's put us in this world with some resources. I'm going to give you three really quick ones. The first one is the Word and the Spirit. It's the Word and the Spirit. God has given us the Bible, and God has given us His Holy Spirit, so that every single day when we get up, we can look at the Word of God, understand God's truth and His wisdom, and then all during the day, if you put your trust in Jesus Christ, His Spirit is with you, speaking to you if you will but listen. So the Word and the Spirit. The next one may be a little harder for some of you, and that is parents for the young. Parents for the young. Now, as God was designing the world, like, He could have come up with a billion different ways to bring the next generation of into the world besides having a man and a woman and combining their genetics and having children that were dependent and needed help. Like, they can't eat coming out of the womb. They need help. God could have come up with a billion different ways, but you know what He did? He designed the family. And He put kids in it. In all these passages that we've been reading in Proverbs, my son, listen to your father's instructions. Listen to your mother's wisdom. What has God done? God has designed the family. So children, listen to your parents. You say, well, my parents are really dumb. Careful. Careful. What you're essentially saying is, God, you don't know. You designed a flawed system. You put these older people in my life that are whacked out. And, you know, I can just tell you right now, I mean, in just like maybe one or two people in the whole wide world, but other than one or two people in the whole wide world, parents know better than a 12-year-old, okay? They just do. Even if they are stupid. They just do, okay? Here's an important thing for young people to learn. Okay, get this, real important. Your ability to learn to respond correctly to the authority of your parents will set you on a lifelong trajectory to obedience to God. And most of the reason why mom and dad are having trouble following God and submitting to Him is because your parents, believe it or not, kids, were rebellious to their moms and dads too. And when you do that, you say, okay, God, you don't know what you're doing. You gave me these idiots to raise me, and they got all these stupid rules, like, you know, where I drive, who I hang out with, what I smoke, what I drink, you know, who I, you know, associate with, what I listen to, what I do with my time, like all these stupid, really crazy rules. You know what? Like, if you can learn to live under their stupid and crazy rules, you're going to become an adult that learns and understands how to obey God when He gives you one of those stupid and crazy rules that you don't understand either, but it'll save your life. The other brilliant thing that God did when He created the family and put kids in it is He put this huge burden on you, mom and dad, to teach them something worthwhile. So turn the stupid TV off and learn something to share with the next generation that makes it worthy of you being their teacher, okay? We need to do that. We need to own this responsibility to be wise, to mentor the next generation. Finally, wise counsel for the rest, okay? Everybody needs to have somebody in their life that teaches them wise counsel. Two verses and we'll wrap up here. Proverbs 5:22, plans fail. I'm going to put it up here for you. Plans fail for lack of counsel, but with many advisors they succeed. Every one of us needs people in our life that can speak wise counsel into us. Proverbs 27:9, perfume and incense bring joy to the heart, and the pleasantness of one's friends spring from his earnest counsel. What's cool about having really good friends, everyone, is not that they get you. Not that they accept you no matter how you are, but that they tell you the truth because they love you enough to make you better. So here's the deal. Big truth number three. Listen and learn if you want to live wisely. Let's bow our heads. Just challenge you just this moment to ask yourself the question, am I wise in my own eyes or am I trusting the Lord? Am I listening to the people that He's put in my life to guide me? Or am I going on my own? I just want you to take that with you. Just take that with you today. Meditate on it during the week. I'll let God speak to you. I'm going to ask the men and women of our prayer team to make their way to the front.